You know our slogan around here is better practice, better life. But we're taking this belief to the next level. And we've recently announced the creation of a new association. It's called the Best Practices Association. Our association celebrates the mindset that is better practice, better life. This mindset celebrates time, healthy living, personal growth, clinical excellence, and impacting the lives of your patients and your team through intentional leadership. In fact, we are the work-life balance experts in dentistry. The BPA will coach independent dental practices like yours to thrive by sharing best practices and operational habits, behaviors, systems, tools, and insight that lead to profitability and sustained growth, and you can still have a life. So if you're a dentist that wants to surround yourself with great thinkers, let us help you create your own version of better practice, better life. Go to actdental.com/BPA or hit the link in the show notes.
Hello, this is Marco Brindis, and you're watching The Best Practices Show. Hey guys, thanks for watching the Best Practices Show, where you take a look at the best business practices from the best dental practices all over the world. And if you're growing a great restorative practice, you know you have these patients in your office. And today we're going to talk about a very unique viewpoint from one of the world's experts on this very topic. This could be one of the best show topics we've ever created with Dr. Marco Brindis. You do not want to miss this. This guy is awesome and he's brilliant. So do me a favor, grab a pen and hit the share button. You're going to absolutely love this. Now, a couple show notes. We are shooting this live on Facebook. So as you're watching it, if you have a couple questions, add them to the feed and I'll ask Marco while we have him on here, live, and we'll get the answers straight from the expert himself. Or if you're watching him later on, continue to add questions to the feed. And you'll see Marco's fantastic on social media, and he'll get back to you and answer your questions. Loving, absolutely loving the suggestions for shows and a lot of great controversial topics that are coming up. And I don't know if you guys watched earlier this week, but we had some incredible ones, and we've got some incredible ones lined up. So keep sending them to us. We are now up over 39,000 followers on Facebook. So I can't thank you guys enough for all the shares, comments, everything, and over 150,000 of you visiting us on iTunes. And I don't have anything to say, but thank you. So my guest today, he is a rock star, superstar within the Seattle Study Club Network and a lot of the speaking venues out there. If you haven't seen him, I'm just going to tell you, you got to see him because he is not only an incredible human being, wonderful educator, but he is really a great, great mind in dentistry, a great influencer, Dr. Marco Brindis. And Marco, now we've had you on the show before, and many people that are watching this know exactly who you are. They've had you speak at their study clubs. They've seen you at symposium. They've seen you at the Restorative Academy. But if there's a young dentist who's watching this, because we have dental students watching now and things like this, and we have an international audience now, if they've never heard of Dr. Marco Brindis, tell us a little bit about your story. Who is Marco Brindis? Hello. Thank you so much for having me today one more time. And it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Always, always. And I appreciate giving me this to have this forum, to have some discussion and just some intriguing ideas. I am originally, this accent is actually not Cajun. It's actually Cajun Mexican. And I was born and raised in Mexico. And actually, I started my dental career pretty much when I was 6 years old, because my dad was a dentist and my brother is an orthodontist. And I grew up really surrounded by dentistry. And, for some people, they tell me that, do you really love dentistry? You can say that word. Yeah, I really do, because it has been my life. And really, I know it sounds kind of odd, but yes, it's actually my life. And I love it. And I love it since I really admire my dad for many years.
My dad had a really, really tough childhood. I mean, he started like he's my hero. So I was raised by a really an amazing person, an amazing teacher. And after World War II, he was actually they were having nothing to eat, and he started working when he was 5 years old, and going out in the coffee fields and just tried to bring food to their family with his brother that was 7. And he started his career when he was 11 years old. He started working in a as a lab technician. And here's the thing: at 14 years old, he actually delivered his first denture.
Wow!
It was something else, and it was a very tiny little town in South Mexico. And then he moved to Mexico City to pursue his career of dentistry and study his formal education in dentistry, and with not a single penny. And he moved there, and the way he paid for his books and everything, it was working for the lab students and doing lab work for them. And grew up doing that, and then I saw him contributing to dentistry so much. And actually, he opened 2 dental schools. And so in Mexico, one for the Army first, and then another one where I graduated from, a private school. And I'm very proud to say that. And so because of that, because he was always surrounded by great people that their lives were dentistry. So for me, there was not the choice. And so I got surrounded by really good mentors in my life because of him. And that taught me to, I have the opportunity to be surrounded by that people, and that I had to continue with that legacy and continue in embracing that and hoping that others get to feel the same way, because it's a wonderful career and it's a wonderful feel that you can help others in many ways. And the topic of today is one of my most favorite topics, because it is about a problem that really can hurt mentally and emotionally another human being.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, here, I want to just add this too, because this is your story is an amazing one, Marco. So, 2 things. Number one, you want the viewers to know you're not only a speaker and influencer, but you're also at this LSU School of Dentistry, which is an amazing institution and a very important leader there. You are also, as a very young age, while your father was doing all these things, he had the best minds in dentistry coming. So like, you knew Bill Robbins before you were a dentist. Like, that's pretty amazing. Like, so this didn't just happen for you. You had the unique opportunity of a lifetime of all the best minds coming to you and getting to know these people, right?
Absolutely. And I met Robbins probably when I was in the 13th grade, 12. And I remember I was a little punk, and then he was, the first thing he taught me, it was to water skiing.
Really? One of the best minds in dentistry taught you how to water ski first, okay?
He's awesome. He was, and that was the first time I experienced how incredible teacher he was. Uh-huh. It was back in Monterrey, Mexico. And he taught me how, and I really picked it up, and he was kind of impressed that I was very focused on really listening to him. And that's how we started a really great relationship. In the same meeting in Monterrey, actually, that's where I met Dr. Sheesh. But I heard of him way before, because my dad used to tell me, you're not going to believe it. This guy. And he used to call him Chiche, Dr. Chiche. Mm-hmm. And it's like, this Dr. Chiche, he's amazing. He plays the guitar like nobody. And I was just like, wow, he was so impressed with that, how focused he was, how dedicated he was. You have to see him, And finally, I got to see him after being in private practice for 5 years. And I saw him and I was just like, it blew my mind, And that's when I decided to move to New Orleans to learn from him. And at the time, it was like Ariel Regrowski, Sadana Bishai, Marcus Blatt at the school. And oh my God, I mean, to have the opportunity to learn from these guys, it was outstanding. So, like I said, I was very lucky. I have been very lucky in my life, and now just keeping the tradition, I want more people to feel what I felt, that sense of of being taken care of and really have some great guidance through my life, yeah. You know?
Well, you're definitely doing it, my friend. You're definitely doing it. Now, let's go into the topic because I love this title that you came up, Kissing in a Denture. Now, let's give everybody a perspective of what you mean by the title and why this is so important before we get into the details.
Absolutely. I have to say, I stole that name from one of my former students in LSU. And now he's in Utah University, and his name is Mark Durham. Okay. And he has devoted his life to really take care of. He said one very powerful statement at some point. It was like, I think like it was like 10 years ago. He told Marco, I'm going to devote my life to cure edentulism. Mm. To cure edentulism. There's no need. We cannot let this happen. We cannot have patients with no teeth. And that's when I saw the first time I saw that statement in a lab, Kissing in a Denture, is the way he named one of his lectures. And that's where I'm getting this concept from. And it just makes so much sense. Mm-hmm. Kissing in a Denture. What is this about is it gets you into the perspective of put yourself on the other side, being the patient that has no teeth. Mm-hmm. You know? And now, I mean, first of all, they're miserable. You know, they're mentally ill, emotionally ill, socially ill. They're afraid. They have a lot of anxiety. They don't have the right nutrition, and then in general they're in really bad shape health wise. Mm-hmm. And then what we have been doing for them for the longest time is to give them a denture. So. It was like, is it the denture, the really standard of care that we have to offer to our patients? And I understand it's good thing. However, you really don't take care of many of the issues that we have with the edentulous patient.
Right.
The chewing efficiency is not good. It is proven. There's many articles showing how an edentulous patient with denture, actually, they start creating more changes in their muscles of mastication and start making them actually more powerful because the brain start noticing that they're not getting enough nutrients to the body that start increasing the power. So they're actually wasting more energy, but at the same time, the chewing efficiency is actually 10 times less faster. So if you have a patient with teeth and a patient chewing the same food with a denture, you know, the one with teeth is gonna finish, if it takes you 10 minutes for a dentate patient, it's gonna take 100 minutes for a patient with teeth. So what you end up doing, you're not gonna spend that much time eating, so you're gonna end up eating less. And not only that, not really masticating enough, and they start having gastritis and other health problems is because of that.
Right. Now let's put both of those together. I love this topic, kissing. So we're going to talk about the perspective of the patient, but I also want to talk about the perspective, if I'm a young dentist watching this, the realities of these patients come in, they're edentulous, and you got to put this puzzle together for them. Like even on Monday, you had a patient come in and you had to put the puzzle together and they had seen three incredible mentors. And, yeah. And so let's talk about the difficulty as a dentist when you're seeing a patient like you did on Monday.
Yeah, so it's just like, and going back to my dad, I mean, he taught me so much. He was so fast working with dentures and everything. But when you have the implants, that's definitely justified to have implants because that really brings a completely different perspective for the patient, you know. And that's the concept of kissing a denture. Imagine yourself with a denture. Kissing somebody, being intimate with somebody. Imagine that. And actually, I imagine the patient having a lollipop inside and clack, 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 clack inside of your mouth. Imagine that feeling. So because of that, I really have a lot of, I agree with my friend, Dr. Durham, and we have to do something about that. So, and we have solutions now. I mean, we have the implants and they have been wonderful. I mean, Brandenmark started doing that in the 60s. Treating the lower denture was never good. I mean, everybody knew that. And he was able to have something completely implant supported And we have been following up on that for the longest time, and it has such a cornerstone in dentistry, and that's amazing. So later in life, we kind of start applying the same concepts for the maxillary arch. But then we start looking after those maxillary arches were restored, we started noticing that it's a completely different animal. It's not the same as the mandible. It has other types of requirements that it need to be addressed for the patient. So let's put an example of the patient that I saw on Monday. Okay, this patient, he calls me. He's like, "Dr. Brindis, I got recommended for one of your former students that is in the area, and he told me to come see you because I'm very confused on what to do. I've been treated by these three dentists, and all of them outstanding clinicians that know exactly what to do, you know." There's one that the patient has to travel all the way to Pennsylvania to get follow-ups and to have maintenance. And so the patient's starting to get tired of trying so far, so she's trying to find somebody to take care of that. Mm-hmm. This is a problem. The patient, let's see what the patient has, okay? The patient has a maxillary scretane zirconia prosthesis, all right? Full contour zirconia prosthesis.
Mm-hmm.
Against a lower mandibular conventional hybrid plastic with plastic teeth, right? That at some point it was a head-of-bar type of removal prosthesis.
Mm-hmm.
But the patient got tired of having to replace the part so often. And remember, the patient has to go to Pennsylvania. So, and you know how it is with the header bars, the plastic parts, they wear off. And I cannot tell you how often because in every patient is different. Mm-hmm. But in this particular patient, it was pretty often, like every 3 months or 4 months, and they have to take a flight and go there. Finally, got tired of that, and they decided to convert that into a screw retain prosthesis. Okay, plastic. So the patient comes to me. What's the problem? She's having some concerns. First of all, he's having some wear on the lower dentition. He's having some staining over there. That's due. The patient is complaining like, "Dr. Brindis, I'm the neatest person in the world. I became a dentulous in my 20s. Mm-hmm. The patient is now 70-something, the early 70s, all right? So the patient has been a dentulous since he was 20-something. So for her, it was a completely big change in her life to finally have something fixed to chew with, you know. But now, here's the thing, and that's what we see all the time. We see on these symposiums. I remember in 2002, I did my first screw-retain prosthesis. I placed my own implants. I delivered my immediate denture prosthesis. I did the whole thing. And you know something very, 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 very interesting? Happens that that was my most successful hybrid prosthesis. Really?
Really?
You know why?
Why?
Because I moved to New Orleans.
Because you moved to New Orleans?
Yes, because I never got to see my patient again.
Oh.
You see?
I see.
But the patients that I get to see again, I get to see their problems and the complaints and the things that they have to go through. So going back to this story, my patient is telling me, "Man, I had such a hard time to clean this stuff, you know?" So you have one doctor that tells her, you know, you have to change that lower arch because you're going to keep continue wearing that bottom teeth. And it's too often. I mean, it's completely different materials. Zirconia is, of course, a lot stronger than plastic, right?
Right.
So if you don't change that, that's never going to change. It goes back to another prosthodontist, the one that he was kind of like doing the header bar before, and he says, no. You need to keep that plastic. It's for a reason. You need to keep that plastic because we need to control the failure, you know? You're like, what do you mean control the failure? So now the patient is asking me, what do you think? Another concern, aesthetics. So when the patient smiles real high, that she doesn't do that. And the reason why is because of the transition line in between the prosthesis and the natural gingiva. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't look good at all. Mm-hmm. So again, maxilla has very different approach. On the mandibular, you can have high water and it works. On the maxilla, you can't, because the patient cannot speak and they start speeding when they talk, right? So then you have to have contact with the tissue. That makes it really hard to clean, you know? Right. If you want to hide that transition line, you cannot use a flange because you cannot clean anything. I mean, there's no way you can use a flange. So, and then what kind of contact do you use? And then I started noticing, since 2002, I started getting more and more frustrated about these type of prostheses and understanding that the patient have problems, you know? So I'm gonna continue just finishing what is it that I talk to my patient. And my patient was too concerned about, what am I gonna do? The other problem is that the patient didn't want to remove this ever, because they remove it once, and you know, as everybody knows, when you remove a prosthesis from an implant, if you don't have a transmucosal abutment, the tissue is gonna collapse. So when they were trying to put it back, it was pinching the tissue, it was very painful for the patient, so the patient doesn't want to remove it. Now, both prostheses, smart enough, they tell the patient, you have to remove that. Mm-hmm. You have to have maintenance. You have to remove it at least once a year. And I agree 100% with that. Why? We have a saying in Mexico, you cannot cover the sun with one finger. Meaning, just because you can cover and you cannot see it, it's not there. Mm-hmm. So there's no way you can evaluate the health of the implants without removing the prosthesis. A radiograph is not enough.
Yeah.
Not even close. So that has to be removed. And that's going to bring some extra costs for the patient to be removed so often. All right. The patient has to be in the meantime during the year, has to be in a maintenance plan, because the hygiene has to go like and try to clean everything. So the patient is doing a great job, doing her best. I'm not saying a great job. He's doing a lot to clean them and spending a lot of time cleaning them. And she's kind of getting tired and she doesn't know what to do.
Yeah. Keep going. Cause I have a couple questions.
Okay. But just finish one topic. Let's just finish just material selection. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we all know that zirconia, it's a great material and it's a strong, really, really strong. It's not as porous as acrylic, you know? So the amount of bacteria going into the material is going to be less. So the smell is going to be different. You know, we all know that. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's a strong material. One of the prosthodontists that proposed to have the zirconia opposing, I understand why, you know, it's a better material. And I talked to the patient, these are the great things. It's a very strong material. You're going to require less often maintenance of this material, and it's going to be great. Now, but you have to be aware of one thing. Okay, my concern is, if I have two strong materials against each other, what's going to happen? For me, in my experience, is going to be flipping a coin and see which one, because everything, like we have talked before, everything is temporary. Nothing is forever. Mm-hmm. So when it fails, where is going to fail?
Yeah.
Right. And I don't, like flipping a coin, I forgot to mention, the upper prosthesis has zygomatic implants involved. So that makes it even harder, because these, they have to be kept, splinted the whole time. Okay. It's very important for the success of these type of prosthesis. So now it's just like, I don't want them to break in on the upper. And if I put a lower, it's just like flipping a coin. Which one, and start betting here in the office, which one do you think is going to fail first?
Yeah.
And I don't know.
Yeah. And you mentioned that last time we talked, and I use that all the time. Now, everything is temporary. Which one is going to fail first? So you've got that factor. You already talked about the bacteria issue. Now, which one is better for the tissue, you know, and which one is better screw routine? Like, these questions constantly come up, and you've got to weigh all these factors when determining treatment and communicating with the patient.
Yes, exactly. And once you are aware that everything is temporary and everything has a lifespan and that you have to repair something at some point, then you are more conscious about the selection of your type of prosthesis, you know, because it's like, okay, what is it, how is it going to be once it fails? And unfortunately, a zirconia prosthesis, when it fails, it really fails. It's not a repairable material. Once it fails, you have to redo the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And as we know, it's not cheap. It's not cheap. Not to mention one of my favorite doctors, Dr. Anitua. He have done tons and tons of those prosthesis a long time ago. He told me, Marco, I'm really concerned about that because I had a couple of patients that when they broke it, it's just like having a knife inside of the mouth. Mm-hmm. So he was like really concerned about that. So he kind of like moved away from that type of prosthesis. Again, I'm not attacking anybody that keeps doing it. It's just a perspective, okay? I'm getting different opinions from everybody, and I appreciate all of them. But it makes sense. It makes sense that how it's going to fail, all right? So once you understand it's going to fail, it's like, I want to be more part of the failure and want to have a little more control where I want this to fail, mm-hmm. okay? So for the patient, imagine you are the patient. Would you rather have this breaking the upper when that's the one that you show social and everything, or you want the lower to break? My personal choice would be, for me, I don't want the upper to break. If anything, I want the lower. Okay. Mm-hmm. Aesthetic wise, I think there's excellent labs that can make zirconia look great as well as plastic. Right.
Right.
So that's not a concern for me. It's about how long they're going to last. Obviously, the strong one is going to wear the lower one. In other words, everything is going to break on the weakest link, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So why not selecting the link that I want to fail?
Because nobody thinks in terms of that. You never think in terms of failure, but it's true. It's part of the equation.
It's a crucial part of the equation. Just put your ego on aside and understand that your things are going to fail, mm-hmm. okay? And what are you going to do when they fail? So the other thing that I told my patient, okay, you're stronger, and that's the first thing I'm concerned about. Where is it going to break? The second thing, yes, I heard about that. Well, the second thing that probably you haven't heard about that is how it's going to sound when you have two prostheses made of zirconia against each other. You're going to have a clack, 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 clack all the time. And I'm not sure if you have ever been with a patient in front of you with zirconia against zirconia. It's loud. And you can hear it. I mean, if you're talking to that person, you can hear it, the clack, clack, clack. Imagine how it's going to drive the patient nuts to have that clack, clack, clack. Nobody really talks about that, but it's a true concern. And I'm not just lying about that. I'm just saying stories from my patients and what I have actually seen happens.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's something. And when I told the patient that, like, thank you so much, you just made my decision. Now I understand I don't want to have that clack because I know it's going to drive me nuts.
Yeah. So
at that point, the patient decided, like, you're wrong, you're right. I mean, you're going to have, and I told her, you know, right now, how long is it going to last? I don't know. I really don't know how much it's going to last. But I can tell you, guarantee you're going to have to replace that and rebase it and probably have new teeth at some point.
Okay? Yeah. And we got a great question from our resident watcher, whose name's Deepak. He's always asking great questions. And you're in the education world. So Marco, he asks this question: do dental schools presently devote enough time to teaching how to treat the edentulous patient? Or does one like yourself have to supplement that education with additional training? What's your thoughts on that?
That's a loaded one. That's a loaded one.
It is a loaded question.
I think, there's actually, if you don't know this, there are actually some programs that actually are, some dental programs that are actually eliminating from the curriculum dentures.
Why is that?
I don't know. I'm guessing is because perhaps they want to leave that up to the prosthodontist, to a specialist. And I really don't want to say, but I'm going to have to say it. I think this is a problem for everybody, for any restorative dentist. This shouldn't be a problem for a prosthodontist. If we want to take care of, if you don't know, we are close to get to a 40 million edentulous patients in the United States. 40 million. That's going to be in 2020. Okay? To take care of 40 million people, you need more than just prosthodontists. And my main concern is not protect my specialty. It's the ultimate goal is to protect our patients.
Right.
Okay. So perhaps if that's one of the reasons that they want to leave it up to the prosthodontist. In general, with the education that we got in dental schools, in general, we get techniques that are really valid, but sometimes they're not so updated. You know, you get the conventional border molding technique with conventional materials and the conventional custom tray and the 5 to 7 appointments to get to the final result and all that. When actually there's the other techniques that actually with the new technology, we can do things faster and better. And there mm-hmm. are great techniques out there. So answering to your question, I think that there's a lot more to offer and there's a lot more to learn. I think you get the basics, and in most of them, you're going to get good basics of how to treat the edentulous patient. But if you're going to, I don't know any program, but I don't know all of them, and not even most of them. But I don't know for the ones that I know, any program that actually teaches implant-supported prosthesis as part of the curriculum for everybody. There's some electives and everything, but not for everybody. So at the end, if you want to work with implant-supported prosthesis, you definitely have to have extra training and intense extra training outside of dental school.
Yeah. What other considerations, if I'm a young dentist watching this, Marco, what would you tell me that I need to understand about kissing in a denture, you know, taking the perspective of the patient?
Well, always try to just, instead of listening, it's great to go learn to the meetings and our specialty meetings, and it's great to hear the opinions from the leaders and tell us where things are going and how to improve the techniques. But we have to spend more time on listening to the patients. And you know, because there's not too many articles showing these problems that I listed that this patient had. They don't talk too much about that. They focused a little bit more on the technique and how to perform that, how to plan it, but not on what's going to happen when he fails, the concerns of the patient from halitosis. It's a really big concern, you know? Let me ask you, just picture yourself at one day that you were so busy that you haven't been able to brush your teeth. How uncomfortable you feel when you start talking to people like they're close to you.
Oh, I'm talking, you know, you're talking to people like this. You're even cognizant of the fact that you need a piece of gum. You know, even when I'm coaching fifth grade football, I'm like, oh, I've been, you know, I got to have a piece of gum in, or the kids are like, whoa, you know, so I couldn't even fathom, you know, on the edentulous patient. Now, the other thing too, Marco, I can't stop thinking about this. You talk about 40 million people. These patients are going to be living longer than ever. 1 in 3 babies that's born today is actually going to be living to 100. So this 40 million is going to grow exponentially. And these people are going to, this is not going away. This is going to continuously show up in your office. I don't care if you're a general dentist. I don't care if you're a prosthodontist. I don't care if you're an orthodontist. You're going to see these people coming into your office. You're going to be like, whoa, this problem's not going away. So it's going to be very important to understand, listen, and be able to provide the right care for these patients long term.
Absolutely. You know, going back to my patient from Monday, she got her prosthesis done in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it's been, only 14 years.
Right. All right.
So she got him when she was already an older person. But there's many patients that there are dentulous at 40, you know, and that you're going to give these type of prosthesis at 40. These patients is already very frustrated after 10 years or 14 years. Imagine the patient that has to leave these for the rest of their lives for another 40 years, 50 years, 60 years. So it is great that we have this baseline, but from there, I think we have to come up with better solutions. Okay. And just to be honest with ourselves, understanding our limitations, that's the only way that we can continue growing and finding better solutions for our patients. Accepting the mistakes, not the mistakes, accepting the limitations that we have, and accepting the reality that, you know, we are not Superman, we are not perfect, and things are not perfect in life, and that accepting that we can move on to learn better ways to do this. And we are, in a way, we are. However, I think we are not changing completely the concept. For example, screw retain is a screw retain. The screw retain means it's going to be there 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
The prosthesis that is going to be 24/7 in an edentulous patient, like I mentioned before, it's proven that these patients are going to start creating more forces than the edentate patient. And more forces that they're going to be applied during the night and during the day 24/7. With no proprioception.
Yeah.
Okay. So these things are going to break. I mean, they already broke their own teeth. These things are going to break. And not only that, these things, they're hard to clean. They're really hard to clean. And there's a lot of limitations that we have in the maxilla. We're based on how much resorption we have. So, for example, most of the time we have a resorption on the facial, right? On the maxillary bone, all right? And then you try to reposition the teeth forward. What's going to happen with those teeth in relation with the bone? You're going to have a big step. These are the teeth, and the bone is right here. You're going to have this big step to get into to clean your implants. That's a big limitation.
Yep.
That's a really big limitation. The transition line, what do? Well, one thing for another. Either you have to hide that transition line, you have to cut off more bone. And my concern of being too aggressive with bone reduction is like, what are you going to do if this case fails completely and the implants fail? Now you're going to end up with nothing.
Right.
And in zygomatic implants now, it's like, I mean, I know we have solutions. However, do you want to have zygomatic implants in yourself? I don't want to.
No.
Mm-hmm. It's great to have that option when there's nothing else.
Right.
I agree 100%, and I'm very grateful that there are people, experts, as they're doing that technique, and it's great.
Right.
But I don't think it's plan A or B. It's like really far down when nothing else can be done.
Right.
You know? So we have to be very careful thinking of what's going to happen once we jump into these cases and like, oh, let's hide this transition line. Let's cut off more bone. Be careful. And I know that there are other clinicians that feel like me, they feel uncomfortable removing that much bone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this is a very dynamic environment, dentistry and learning. I mean, it's changing faster. We've got digital more than ever. We've got, you know, at the intersection ahead, I'm going to do another show with you. We're going to talk about zirconia. Their materials are getting better. We also have your friend who's eradicating or trying to the edentulous patient. So there's a lot of things that are on the horizon. There's never been a more exciting time to be a dentist, but you said it earlier, we've just got to embrace the learning path and really listening to patients, because it's going to be unbelievable what we can do for these patients. But putting this puzzle together with all these things is going to be critically important. I'm excited to do the one on zirconia, because that's a very controversial one too, that you and I, and we're going to talk about the science of that. So, and Marco, you and I are both very passionate about this, but taking the learning path on this is critically important. We're both passionately involved in something called the Seattle Study Club. Just talk about the learning path when it comes to the edentulous patient in the future. You got to be involved in the Seattle Study Club, something like that in the future, where you're getting the best information from people around you and applying it every day in your practice.
Absolutely. I think, I have learned so much from being involved with the Seattle Study Club, because, you know, it's not only the lectures, which are amazing, that symposium is amazing, the presentations are in the top of the line, the best you have ever seen. They're getting better and better, the quality of the presentation, the quality of the delivery. But that is nothing compared of the community.
Mm-hmm.
The community that is that you surround yourself with these people that having a conversation and going through the real life dentistry, which is talking about our failures, talking about what's going on, what are your frustrations and everything. And you go to the symposium and you end up in the same table with Bob Marges, with Bill Robbins, with Jerry Sheesh, and they talk, they sit down and talk to you, and it's like, it's not you're here and you're here. we are all in the same mix of the great community that is, keeps growing together. And that's so unique and so wonderful about the Cheryl Study Club, the way we have this community. And that we help each other, that we love each other, that we are a family. We have that sense of family. You have been, I mean, so many. This is going to be your fourth time at the symposium. And, oh, my God, I don't know too many that can say that.
Well, I've been to 10, but this will be the fourth one I've spoken to. And I'm just grateful. I mean, like you said, Marco, it's a very special community of people. I couldn't imagine being in dentistry without that. So I'm just going to say this. If you're watching, you guys already know we're big fans of it. Just go. You know, Marco will be there. I'll be there. Bob Margis will be there. You get to see the best clinicians in the world. So we put a link in there, Seattle Study Club Symposium. Check it. Click it out. Or click it, check it out, and join us down there. It'll be in January. And then also, Marco, I know people that are watching this are going to have questions for you. And keep in mind, people are watching or listening on iTunes. Tell them, ask them. If somebody's got questions, they can reach out to you, right? You'll be able to respond to them.
Absolutely, absolutely. Like I said, I want to keep continuing the growing of this community. Mm-hmm. And it's just to help each other and in an honest way and just answer a question from my most honest opinion. And I have to remark opinion. I'm not saying I'm right. I'm just like any other human being, and I have my own opinion based on the knowledge that I have. And I know there's certain things that I'm gonna be wrong, and I can wait to know what is it that I'm doing wrong, you know? And just to leave in a high note this topic, we have been talking about problems, and to talk about the perspective from the patient and everything. There are other solutions, you know. A prosthesis that the patient can remove, it is an option. And obviously, there are different options to get to that point, from a very simple type of a restoration, like it's a locator retained prosthesis, all the way to the really fancy, really elaborated spark erosion bar with attachments and everything, a prosthesis that can be removed that can have flanges to hide that transition line instead of removing bone, you know, stuff like that. And recently, in the last 6 years or so, we have been exploring a different alternative that can have the combination of both worlds, the rigid solution of the screw retained prosthesis and the advantage of the patient being able to remove at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. So we probably can talk about that, the solution of kissing a denture in a different show, because that what gets me very excited, and that what has been keeping me busy in the last 6 years. And it was just like an eye-opener for me. Mm-hmm. It's something I learned in Germany in 2009. But has been done for a long time, since 1993 in Germany. But we kind of didn't have that approach here in the United States. So again, with their limitations and everything, but I've been very excited on exploring this new way to have that the good things that you get from the screw chain, which is great, but as well to taking care of the problems that this person experienced with cleaning, transition line, and materials.
Yeah, so we're going to do that show. So we'll do one on the treatment planning process and the nuances of it, specifics, and we're also going to do one on the zirconia, which we'll schedule too. So good stuff. Marco, I am always grateful for all of your expertise, knowledge, and you're just a great guy. So I'm just going to say this, if you got a study club or if you're part of a study club, and if you're not part of a study club, be part of a study club. But if you have a study club, you're going to want this guy to come speak, because everybody's raving about him, and you can see why. He's just a great human being, practical solutions, things we can use all the time. And Marco, I know people are going to reach out to you, so I encourage you guys to do that if you're listening. Keep sending us suggestions for shows that you guys want to see, whether it be from Marco, which again, we're going to have him back, or other people. We'll line those up. And until we see you next time, keep watching the Best Practices Show. You guys enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you so much, man.